Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watched Tonight, and joining me from across the pond, if he was a scarab, I'd let him infect me. It's John Burke from BurkeReviews.com. How are you, sir?
What an intro. Infecting all those across the land, only if you activate me properly. Cool. We are here to discuss Blue Beetle. It doesn't feel like it's time for another comic book movie, but here we are. But
never ends.
It never does. That used to be a good thing. And I don't know that not even commenting on this movie, just like,
no.
There's so many and there's no end in sight, because all of the ones that come out have like, well, we've got 8 sequels planned, and it's like, oh God.
Let's just do one at a time. And even Wikipedia can't make its mind up. It says this is the 14th installment of the DCEU, yet it also then later goes on to say, actually, it's the first entry into the DCU, which is the Gunn Safran new universe, even if it isn't
chronological
one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then also it goes on to say could be a standalone. It is part of the Gunn DCU, but it's also posited as a standalone. But I know what you mean. Too much of something doesn't always equate to quality, unless the films are quality. But we'll get to the film shortly. But how are you, JB? You keeping Florida safe and well?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing my part. It's unbelievably hot here right now, and that's what we do here in Florida. We just stay hot. How about you over there? Is everything cool and kosher over in jolly old England?
In Blighty with our English muffins. Well, I'm looking at it's 67 degrees Fahrenheit at the minute, but apparently, according to Windows, tomorrow's temperature is going to tie the record high for August the 23rd. So we are also going to be pretty hot over here. I do fancy an English muffin now. And like we said off air earlier on, well, I am English, yet we still refer to them as an English muffin, because I can't, in all good faith, get up in the morning and say, oh, I'm going to have a muffin for breakfast, because something in the back of my head says, no, save that for later, fatty. You can have that. You're not having that for breakfast. But JB sent me a voluptuous image of some muffins. You did get the muffins, didn't you?
Oh, I already had the muffins. I was just like, I was sitting there this morning and I was looking at the English muffins and I was like, I wonder if Matt calls them English muffins. And so I had to send the picture. One of those dumb American things I do on occasion where I'm just like, hey, you over there, how do you call things? And, you know,
I've done the same. I've sent JB images from the American sort of sweet candy soda section we have in certain, I use that terminology because that's what the shops call it, in certain stores over here. And some of the things he'll say previously, he said, yeah, that's ours. No idea what that is. So beware, guys.
Yeah, but I've had English muffins my whole life. Obviously, McDonald's kind of go-to original sandwich for breakfast is the Egg McMuffin. But even there, you don't call it an English muffin when we order it. It's McMuffin, right? So just like I was kind of staring off in the space, drinking my coffee and looking at the package, and I was like,
I wonder.
English, Matt, I wonder. Yeah, and so the picture was sent. I guess I needed more coffee. It is interesting that it is still called English muffins. I don't know if they are. I don't know. We're not going to get into the origins of English muffins on the podcast, but I am curious. I haven't done any research. I don't know if they started there. Like, why are they English muffins and not just muffins? And why are muffins a thing?
Why is it called a muffin?
Like, language is dumb. And that's, I guess, kind of the fixation that I fall into. It's like, we make weird choices with language. Obviously, the big difference that you and I have had long conversations about is biscuits and scones. Obviously, Americans, especially Southern Americans, when we say biscuits, we have a very specific thing in mind. You think cookie to us.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and scones are our biscuits. And we have different scones that are triangle shaped for some reason. I like all of it. I like carbs. They're not good for us, but they sure are tasty.
Come on. Who doesn't want a stodgy breakfast muffin? Just before we move on, then, there we go. Google's telling me now, why is it called an English muffin? JB, According to harryanddavid.com, the English muffin, as many Americans know it, is the brainchild of British expat Samuel Bath Thomas, who, in 1874, emigrated from his homeland of Plymouth in the United Kingdom to the United States. So that doesn't give me any answers whatsoever. I think it's because it's something to do with a different yeast, by the looks of it. But you haven't come for this. Listen, I've now told you that some of the American and English treats that you get on either side of the border, either side of the Atlantic, sorry, aren't authentic. But what is authentic is our opinions on film. What a segue that is. And that's what we're about to give you this week. If you're new to the show, welcome. We talk about things other than food, but we do like a bite to eat. On this main show that you're listening to right now, we deliver non-spoiler thoughts and opinions on the latest release of the week, the biggest one, most interesting, or in some cases, the only release of the week. And then in most cases, we drop a short spoiler minisode in a few days' time on the same feed. So tonight, we're going to be dropping a non-spoiler review of the 14th film in the DCEU, or the first in the DCEU, whatever you want it to call it. Of course, we're talking about Blue Beetle, the next in line in the DC stable. Blue Beetle is directed by Angel Manuel Soto and written by Gareth Dunnett Alcocer. And the cast, the initial cast reads Zolo Marin Duena, Bruna Marquezine, Becky G, Damian Alcazar, George Lopez, and Adriana Baratha. Now, we don't give spoilers, but we are going to read the synopsis, which says, an alien scarab chooses college graduate Jaime Reyes to be its symbiotic host, bestowing the teenager with a suit of armor that's capable of extraordinary and unpredictable powers, forever changing his destiny as he becomes the superhero known as Blue Beetle. Now, is superhero fatigue a thing? According to the Marvel's director, Naya Da Costa, it is, but let's see how it's doing with fans and critics. Rotten Tomatoes. Critically, this stands at 76%. The audience, though, much kinder, with 92%. Metascore has a fairly decent 61. The IMDb score out of 10 is 6.8, and Letterboxd is 3.3 out of 5. And it's now available to watch in theatres and theatres only. And like we always say, sometimes, even if we don't like the film, we'll still say go and support cinemas and theatres by going to watch the film. If you can go and check it out, do so and help fund theatres and keep them alive. Now, as we say, we give non-spoiler thoughts and opinions on this, but I'll just quickly jump in. I'll throw it over to you as well, JB. In terms of the DCEU, the dying embers of, and the idea of a DCU, the DCEU had all the potential in the world to be excellent. But for me, they fumbled it by just trying to be Marvel too quickly. Whereas Marvel took 10 years and 18 films or whatever to build up to Infinity War with its collection of superheroes together. We went from a couple of films before we got the Justice League and didn't really have enough time to sit with them. So some of the, like Man of Steel has good moments in it. Then it devolves into what it does at the end. I think the ideas in it are pretty good. And there are good films sprinkled throughout the DC EU. I don't know if I'm willing to say that there are any great films in there, but it has seemingly come to a bit of a kind of a damp squib of an ending with The Flash and the news that Aquaman 2 is still coming out, but it's been pushed. I'm starting to kind of worry about that film. Now, they're never going to can it because of how much it costs, but just doesn't fit right for me to just release that after this film. So the DCU love the idea of it because, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, all these cool characters and The Flash, and these are cool characters that you can do a lot with. It didn't work for me. The potential was lost, I think. The DCU now has a chance to obviously wipe that slate clean, or according to James Gunn, partially clean, because there will be certain crossover, which again, I do not agree with. But we're getting new superheroes, or we're getting existing ones in different aspects. We're getting Superman, but we're not getting the origin story. Similar with Batman. We're getting Batman, but it's a different Batman, also to the one that Robert Pattinson is portraying. But we're also getting Swamp Thing, we're also getting Supergirl, and we're also getting Blue Beetle. That's what excites me the most, JB, before I even think about giving any thoughts on the film. It's the idea that, like the MCU with Iron Man and Thor, that they are, to me anyway, as a non-kind of hardcore, they're taking these characters which don't always jump out the page to me, like Blue Beetle and Swamp Thing, and putting them front and centre alongside their core heroes. Now, I'm excited about that. I just wish it was more of a clean slate rather than a almost clean slate. But DCU, what are your kind of overall thoughts on it now that's pretty much got dead and gone? And do you, can the DCU reach the potential that DC has?
I mean, I agree with almost everything you said. I don't think there's a great movie. If there is one, I think it would be Gun Suicide Squad.
Good show.
That's the one that really resonated the most. And it's essentially just because Gunn did DC's Guardians, like in the storytelling and the he definitely gets misfit characters better than most storytellers. And that, you know, building a family from nothing, which is a theme he's kind of explored in many of his films. And, I obviously love the DC characters outside of the movies. Those have been my favorite comic characters, as much as I love Spider-Man and as much as I always loved the X-Men as a kid, partly because of both of those had animated series that were prominent when I was a kid. I wasn't a big Marvel fan outside of those. And I was aware of Iron Man and I was aware of Captain America, but I always thought they were just kind of lame. And it wasn't until the MCU that really made me appreciate those characters on a big level. And the opposite effect happened with DC, where I'm like, "Whoa, what have you done to my Batman?" You know,
yeah.
Batman doesn't kill people. Zack Snyder, like those are things that, like, are fundamental elements of the character that you've just thrown out the window. And you know, there's a lot. Their mishandling of all the things. The we have the one shots that they're doing, which does feel like a comic book, and there is a place for that in comic books. So there has to be a place for that in cinema.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's the way in which things were brought to us and delayed and then movies made and then taken away. Like, we'll never see the Batwoman movie, whether it's good or bad. It was made and then vanished. Like, things like that are hard to ignore in the overall practice. So you would think with Gunn coming in with the other guy, Safran or whatever his name is.
Peter Safran.
They would wipe it clean. Like you said, like, start over. Let's cut our losses and start from scratch. And the way in which Blue Beetle falls in between two movies that are irrelevant, keeping in mind all the Gail Gadot stuff that was happening while Blue Beetle was about to come out, her claiming they were working on Wonder Woman 3, and then that being shut down. It's like, who knows what anything's happening at Warner Brothers? Everything feels like chaos. And this character in Young Justice, the animated series that you can watch on HBO Max, or Max, the one you watch for HBO, whatever the stupid name of that, another example of WB fumbling
idiots
everything they have. A legendary studio we're watching just act like a bunch of noobs. It's so frustrating. It feels like a disservice to this character that I think Injustice really shows how cool he is. And that's not to say the movie's bad, but to cram him in between the Flash and a sometime coming Aquaman 2.
Yeah, come on.
When he's not part of that story, it's going to throw off fans. It's also going to, I think, hurt its box office, which, despite headlines like spouting that this dethrones Barbie, it's like, yeah, based on box office, 4 weeks at number one is not normal anyway. So any movie could have dethroned Barbie a month later.
Yeah.
No offense to Barbie nor Blue Beetle. Like, movies don't usually stay number one for 4 weeks anyways. And when we say dethrone, barely. Blue Beetle's box office is not something we would generally be like, oh, look at this, outside of the one detail that Barbie for the first time isn't number one. It's like, oh, yeah. But Blue Beetle should have been way higher because it should have a built-in comic book fan audience, but because comic book burnout is real, that is down. DC is down in general, proof in The Flash, that should have been a high box office movie for big blockbuster, was not. So now your August release, What a Shock, isn't doing, you know, gangbusters. And then you have the first Latino family superhero movie, and it's not drawing that audience because of all of those other factors I just listed, I think more so than anything. You know, it's a shame because I think the character's interesting. I think there's good performances here. Obviously, we still haven't really talked about this movie. But I do think that this movie was set up to struggle when it should be a box office juggernaut, really. Like a DC movie in the in August when there's not a, I mean, to be fair, there were two other movies that came out alongside of this. Both of those also did not do well. But a superhero movie in August with a new character, a character that's exciting, the visuals in the trailer, you know, are interesting. It should be a success story, and I think DC is going to have another failure story, and that's a shame. Because, again, without commenting on my thoughts on the film, just the way things have played out, it doesn't look like this is going to be what it probably needed it to be, which is a huge financial success to show that there is still hope for DC. Right now, it feels like maybe they should just scrap the whole thing and just let the Pattinson movie, let the Joker thing happen, and then walk away for a little bit.
Yeah, no, yeah,
that's not what they're going to do.
Yeah, Warner Brothers need goodwill. And look, even Blue Beetle coming out and being a billion-dollar smash wouldn't necessarily give them any goodwill in terms of the idiots in chief at the top. But as a company, like, they need wins. And Blue Beetle in August, with all of the reasons you mentioned, especially the representation of Latino families for the first time leading a superhero film, you know, you'd hope that you could get your message across to those particular demographics to draw them out so they can see themselves on screen. But we're looking at about $44 million worldwide after the first week, which isn't, it's a bad return as of now. But then you could also say it is an unknown character, and with everything going on, like you said, with The Flash that didn't do well and the general fatigue, would people rather go and see a new Batman film because it's Batman? Well, everybody loves Batman. If this was a Spider-Man film, would it be opening to 45 million? I don't think so. I think we have that built-in fan relationship, which you don't have with Blue Beetle, and I think that could come down to the marketing as well. But for me, JB, for a film that had everything set up to be a win, which had all these cool ideas in place, and the marketing has been very colourful, been very retro. It's got a very 80s retro wave vibe to it. Mm-hmm. Sadly for me, JB, the film just didn't do enough to separate itself from many other superhero films, and it just felt a little bit ho-hum to me. I don't think it's a bad film, but I do think it's weighed down heavily by a second act, which really does meander on and on for a 2-hour, 7-minute runtime. And by the end, it just felt... this is what I get burnt out by superhero films, because by the end, it just felt like every other film. You have, again, without any spoilers, you have your big CGI battle. I understand there's going to be CGI. You that isn't have, necessarily yeah. the complaint, but it just becomes so overwhelming. The spectacle was lost, and it becomes too much of a kind of like cluster mess in my eyes. The characters, I think the characters are fine. You know, the villains, I'll say that now, Susan Sarandon, God bless her. I'm very much a fan of her, but I don't think the villains are particularly very good. There, we get motivation certainly for one of them, and a reason for events happening as they do or transpire for one of the villains. But overall, I think they're quite weak. And Zolo Mariduena, I hope I'm saying his name correct. He's very charismatic. He brings a lot of charm to the role of Jaime Reyes. I think he's very good in the role. I don't think the character is a little bit flat. I don't think the character is the most appealing of lead superhero teens. I think it's nothing to do with the actor. I think he's good. I think he brings a lot of chutzpah to the role. But none of the characters really stood out. And I think where the film actually worked better for me is actually when they do just sit back and lean into the Latino-ness of the film, when you've got the family around the table and they're having a joke, having fun. They are loud, they're brash at times, but it felt more authentic. And I think that was, for me, at odds with the spectacle that the film at times did deliver and at times didn't. And also the emotion that, for me, didn't really hit very hard because I wasn't invested in the characters. And I also think the messages throughout, there are messages here, obviously, like we say, there's Latino representation. So there are messages here about Latinos' history in America and how they are treated and how their talents are used for their oppressors, if you could be so bold as to say. But I don't think the film really dives as much into that as possible. I think there's, I use this phrase sometimes, I think the director and the screenwriter are keeping those messages at arm's length a little bit so as not to weigh down what is otherwise a fun, colourful superhero film. I think they kind of want to acknowledge that they're there. Look, you know, we're talking about you know, the oppression and how capitalism has you know, really damaged our culture over the decades and centuries. But I don't think they want to dive too far into it. Now, I don't say this, they're not scared of backlash. Maybe they are. I don't think they are. I just think they wanted to create something fun and accessible whilst also having a bit of a deeper core to it. And I don't think they quite got to the root of what they wanted to get to as well as maybe I'd hope they would. I wish, John, that they'd stripped this back a little bit more and given us more with the family. I do like the scenes with Jaime as Blue Beetle, and especially the initial transformation scene. I think that's done very well. I think James Gunn and the gang and the directors once said they wanted to kind of give us a David Cronenberg for kids effect. Mm. That's their words, not mine, verbatim. And I think that's quite cool, and I did enjoy that. So there, I liked the charisma of our lead character. I like some of the visuals. I like that they went for something a bit more upbeat than what we're used to in the DC world, for sure. But the film just didn't stick to that. It didn't differentiate itself enough. It wasn't unique enough for me to stand out and say, yes, this is going to get me out of my superhero funk before we get into the Marvels and Aquaman 2. But I didn't dislike it. It was above average, but not much more. I kind of wanted a bit more. And guess what, John? Mm-hmm. For me, it was a bit too long. But what about you? Because I have no idea what you think about this.
So I think the biggest problem with the movie is the script. Mm-hmm. I think it both tries to do too much and then also forgets like fundamental script writing. Like the second act, which you mentioned, if we're following like the Save the Cat formulaic script writing, should be fun and games. And these are the moments where the hero gets the powers and learns how to use the powers and does cool stuff, right? That's when we're like, yeah, that's the fun part. And at some point, the reality of being a hero sets in and the hero has to fight back and figure out, like, is this really what I want to do? This movie just forgets that. Like, we don't really get a lot of that. Like, Jaime doesn't actually learn how to do anything. The suit itself does, which you could make an easy comparison to Venom, right? It's an alien symbiote there. It's got that symbiotic host thing. You have a similar style of the, it has an inner voice that he's talking to that no one else can hear. So there's that Venom dynamic as well. This movie wants that to be part of it, but it does not give it in a way that is like, this is, I don't think Venom's a great movie. I think Venom was entertaining because of Tom Hardy and the symbiote. Yes. Only the first one. But like, they wrote that dynamic really well. This movie is hoping that we just shorthand the dynamic and that we'll get it when there's supposed to be a payoff. And it's like, you didn't set that up. Mm-hmm. Like, you did nothing to earn any type of catharsis by the end of the film. And I feel like that's this whole thing. Like, personal pet peeve, I think George Lopez is doing way too much in this movie. That's a personal thing. I like him in some things, and often I feel like he's too much. He always feels like he's putting on a performance to me. And honestly, if you look at the costuming of every other character in the family, even this is in the trailer, Nana holding a giant gun feels more natural than anything George Lopez brings to this movie. That's a pet peeve. That's a personal thing. Fine. Mm-hmm. But when you look at all of the writing stuff, it feels there's so much going on. It is an amalgamation of Venom and Fast and the Furious, and Fast and Furious because of the family dynamic. Nothing's more important than family. Obviously, many movies have used that as something for stakes, right? But we've gotten to the point now where Fast and the Furious is the most ubiquitous because they just keep saying the word family, and that's all we need. This mm-hmm. kind of takes on some of that. The villain, it does have a bit of a villain problem, partly because Blue Beetle's already kind of unknown to a lot of people. I knew the character. I have no idea what his villain stable is, and they don't do enough to really give us a reason to be interested in the villain. It is again, without getting into too many of the tropes, it hits a lot of the tropes that comic book, I'm sorry, I don't want to spoil the movies, what I mean. So yeah, I'll just say that there's a lot of tropes in this film. But all of that said, all of the negative things out of the way, even though I also agree with you, Matt, it feels long. At points I'm like, we could trim a lot of this out. It's still, because it's not a dour DC film, it's not just angry, you know, unhappy villains that we, or unhappy heroes that we saw through most of the franchise, it was kind of refreshing. And one of the, I don't think these are my words, but the stakes, the world is not in danger. Like, there is a potential threat to the world being in danger long-term, but really this is a very personal story. It's very small scale. It is Jaime versus these other people who, again, we're avoiding spoilers, so I'm not getting into specifics, but that was also refreshing to have a movie, especially in the DC universe, where like Suicide Squad, it's like, these are criminals with very minimal powers who are used instead of soldiers because they're expendable.
Yeah.
They're going to save the world from a, you know, like, it's like, why don't they just stop a bank heist? Like, that's what they should do. Like, that's their job, is to like, you know, stop something small, not save the world. That's too much. And in Suicide Squad, it starts off with what I just said, and then it escalates, but it makes sense in the escalation why they're there. This film pulls back a bit, and that's nice, because it doesn't need to always be the world. Friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, right? That's what everyone's complaint has been about the Spider-Man Tom Holland series, is he isn't the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's been off running around gallivanting with Tony Stark. Like, he's the world Spider-Man. And the rumors have been, if they continue that route, we're going to get that smaller story. So it was exciting to see that happen here. They're afraid to take this type of budget and do a small story and not make it a nuclear bomb or a Death Star or, you know, like those type of situations. And yet still, it still feels like not enough of an original film, but I enjoyed it far more than it sounds like, I think, is the important thing. I do think it's funny at times. As you noted, Zolo, I do think it's probably not, I don't know how to say his name. I feel terrible. We should have looked it up, but, he is charming. I watched most of Cobra Kai. I don't think I've seen the final season. And he's great in that most of the time, but it does often feel like he is trying to be more, and it's a performance that, it's okay to have a performance feel, but sometimes it is like when some things feel very organic and natural, and then other things feel like he's really forcing. Like, there's a few times where he screams and it feels a little much, and it's like, I don't know. But that could, again, that might just be a preference thing for me. But I do think there was shinings of hope and good faith. And yet it's still, I'm so worried of what this could do to the future of both the character and the franchise, because it does feel like more of an afterthought than a setup movie. Like, it just feels so rushed with its release and when they've released it and why now. And again, the script even feels like it needed another pass to trim some stuff out and tighten some things up and really go, what is our focus? Is it about him and the alien? Is it about him and the family? Are these two things the same? Because it doesn't feel like the movie's really grappling with those as one thing as much as it feels like separate storylines that just don't get enough attention throughout. So overall, not negative, but definitely see a lot of room for improvement.
I will tell you right now, Jonathan Burke of BurkeReviews.com, I did not expect, I didn't expect to be on a similar wavelength. I don't expect you to, as listeners know of this 6-year-old show, whatever it is now, that, yeah, we don't blindly like things, but I watched and thinking, I bet JB's getting more out of this than I am, and not for any other reason either, not because of any kind of intellect reason, like, oh, you dumb Americans or anything like that, as John would say. Let me just play that now. I just thought, I don't know, I could just see it playing more to the things that you like from this genre. But so it's quite refreshing to know that it's not just me being the curmudgeon, because I did think, oh no, because we'll all, both of us will always only ever be honest. And I thought, oh no, I'm going to come on and say, yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. And I was expecting you to say, do you know what? I thought it was a fun, effervescent romp. So
yeah,
I'm quite glad to hear that, but I respect what you said.
But I think we both took that part away. It is, there is fun here. There's fun to be had. And
there is.
You know, it's not to say that, like, movies don't have to be perfect, obviously. And that's just it. I would say 3 stars, maybe 3.5 if I'm being real kind. But I want this to keep going. Like, I don't want this to, like, I'm not mad at this movie. I don't wish this was, you know, different. Even again, the George Lopez stuff, there were moments where he still made me laugh, even if overall I wasn't vibing with his character. And to be fair to Lopez too, I also think they wrote the character a little extreme as far as him being like a conspiracy nut. Like, it felt like not a stereotype of Latin reasons, but like a stereotype as in this archetype of character has been overdone.
Yeah.
And there are, like you mentioned, the look has 80s vibe. There's some throwback 80s movie vibe in this as well.
Yeah. Good show.
I don't know if that makes sense, because it does feel like there's a really cool reference to Del Toro, by the way, Guillermo Del Toro. And only real cinephiles are going to get it, because it's Del Toro's first film is called Cronus. And there is, Nana is flipping through the channels and it freezes on the
Spanish
object.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, that's a Del Toro nod, right? Like, what is that? And obviously it looks like the scarab in the movie. So I think Angel Manuel Soto is obviously, I mean, film people are going to like Del Toro anyways. And then what Del Toro has done for Latin films and making it a little more mainstream and bringing it to American audiences that otherwise would not watch a movie with subtitles. I think there's definitely a nod there, but
you wouldn't expect
I'm
to
like
see it in a comic book. I wouldn't expect to see that reference in a comic book.
And it's a pretty obscure film. I mean, like, again, it's not one like mainstream audiences are going to know Cronus. Like, most people are just gonna be like, well, a gold bug or not even acknowledge what it was on the screen. And I'm like, that's 100% from Cronus. And like, I immediately Googled this, showed my friend, David, editor of Book Reviews, was with me. And I'm like, and he has never seen Cronus. I'm like, look, this. And he's like, well, yeah, that's that.
He's
I'm
like, yeah, nerd.
It's from Del Toro. It's like, yeah, exactly. I'm sitting here like nerding out, like, oh man, Del Toro reference. I've seen all of those movies, but
he's saying, watch the film, John. Sorry, dude. I just got to mention this before I forget, only because this is what grinds my gears the most, JB, about a film like Blue Beetle, which, for all the reasons you said, was set up for success. By the end of the year, no one's going to be talking about Blue Beetle. It's not a film that's going to have a footprint or a legacy, whether culturally or a pop culture, or just, I don't think, even in film in 2023, let alone this decade or anything else. It just feels like a film that's going to, by the time we get to the next superhero film or the next tentpole release, that Blue Beetle will be so far in the rearview mirror. And I don't like having to say that, because, you know, it's you know, kicking a film a little bit, but I do feel that I don't want to compare this to something like Black Panther for that cultural representation and kind of lightning in a bottle effect that film had. But like, I look at Blue Beetle and thinking that there was a chance here to be something more than it was. I think, like you said as well, that it could have been, but there's room to improve. It just kind of makes me feel a bit more frustrated that, yeah, by the end of the year, I think this will be a footnote in most people's thoughts about 2023. Even if it wasn't your favorite film of the year, it had a chance to leave some kind of resonance, and I don't think it has done. And that is the most disappointing and unforgivable thing in a way as well, for a film which had it set up to do quite well. I think.
I agree.
Anything else you want to add on Blue Beetle then before we move on, my friend?
No, I think I've said all I can say. I know it sounds like I'm harping on all the negative things. It's one of those movies where the negatives are, I feel, so obvious that it's frustrating that they're still there. Like, it's like a lot of people have their eyes on this before it comes out. Why can't we tighten these little things up and really, you know, focus in on it? Because I do think it's a disservice to the franchise. It's a disservice to all the actors and the director. If the errors or the mistakes or the choices even are so glaringly problematic in those film fundamental ways, and it's not reinventing anything. It's not adding anything. It's just spinning its wheels through the genre that has been, you know, done to death at this point.
Yes, we need something new, and maybe the DCU can still provide that. But the jury is out, but I don't want to lump that all on Blue Beetle's shoulders. But as you've just heard, John and myself, kind of on the fence somewhat. I think John JB may be slightly more up on it than I am. But if you get a chance to go and watch it, at least support theatres and go and watch the film. But as you know, it'll be on Max or something in the next couple of weeks or months. Anyway, but we'll be back with a short mini-sode with our spoiler thoughts in a few days' time. But let's move on now to our next segment, which we call Chuffed Headlines. Here, John and myself, we take a movie or pop culture news headline that caught our attention for any reason, and we share it with each other and all of you guys as well. So, John, what headline has piqued your interest this week?
Well, I picked this one specifically for you because I know how much you love when movies go extra long. And
thank you.
The 10th film of the Saw franchise, Saw X, I guess that's accurate. They're calling it Saw 10. I don't actually know if that's with Jigsaw and
it is.
Spiral.
Saw 3D is the 7th. Then you've got Jigsaw and then Spiral, which would be 8 and 9.
Got it. And now number X or 10, you know, because we're just throwing all those naming conventions out the window. Thanks a lot, Fast and Furious. And this will be the longest one in the franchise, clocking in at just under 2 hours. So it's still under 2 hours, Matt. So that helps. But it is now literally just under. I think it is 1 hour and 58 minutes or 118 minutes, however you want to say it. So just barely under the 2 hours, but the longest in the franchise, because clearly what everyone's been clamoring for is not only another Saw movie, but more of it when it comes out. So, Matt, does the runtime make you fear John Kramer? It's John Kramer, right? That's right.
It is, yeah. It just the film itself just makes me fear just going to the theater, because pretty much all of the Saw films past maybe three have been arse. They've just not been great, and I've just been looking. Spiral was an hour and 33 minutes. Jigsaw was an hour 31 minutes. Saw 7/Saw 3D, I think, had Chester Bennington as well, rest in peace. That was an hour and 30 minutes. That is your ceiling for a Saw movie, and it isn't even a tolerance for the kind of torture porn or whatever you want to call it, gore porn. It's just, what can you do? I don't, again, without knowing the story of Saw X, I don't think it's going to be the latest Zodiac or something, but kind of level of film. But without knowing the story, what can you do for 2 hours, John? And I do go on about runtimes, because you get those golden films sometimes where it is 2 hours, sorry, 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 40 minutes, but it doesn't feel it because it uses its runtime wisely. And I know we like to joke about it, and I'll be the first, I've just done it about Blue Beetle. If I see a film that's 3 hours long, of course I'm going to have apprehension about it, but it depends on what film it is. Something like Oppenheimer. Given the subject matter, and obviously Nolan, but given the subject matter, there is more argument for that to be that long. But then you get someone like Zack Snyder's Justice League, we'll mention that shortly as well, being nearly 4 hours long. It doesn't need to be that long. And then you watch it and think, well, actually, maybe it did. But then you get something like Saw X, which is 2 hours long. And no, it did. I haven't even seen the film. I'm telling you right now, it doesn't need to be this long. I don't care. Maybe the first hour is going to be them trying to explain how the goddamn hell Tobin Bell is coming back in this. I don't know where in it's the timeline prequel. It worked.
It is a prequel. Have you not watched the trailer?
Well, no, because I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
And I love horror films. You know how much I love horror films.
I did watch the trailer for this. It is a prequel to the at least to the first movie.
Tobin Bell looks so much older. They can't just put a backwards cap on him again.
It's like almost 20 years since Saw came out.
22 years, something like that, yeah.
But my understanding is it's his diagnosis with cancer, which is what sets up, and then him being mad at the system, and that's like starting. Like, I think it's not the first kill, but it's like it's kind of leading up to like the kill that we've seen in Saw. Like, I think that's the way the trailer plays.
You never know, because they kill.
Oh, geez. Which was another example of them waiting way too long to do the sequel.
I picked up that Blu-ray. I went to HMV on my lunch break today, and I saw that. And I don't know why, what made me want to pick it up. Oh, I didn't buy it often, First Kill. But I wanted to see how much they were charging. It was like £6, about $8, which is fairly cheap for a new-ish Blu-ray. And I looked in the back of it, and I was like, God damn, Isabel Furman, who, you know, if Isabel Furman's an attractive lady, but she can't pull off what she was doing in Orphan in 2008 or whenever, or 2007. It is laughably different how much older she looks.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, I've seen it. I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just looked at the back of the cover for some reason, the back of the box, and it just hit me again, like, being a year or so removed from the film, looking at it thinking, what were they thinking? Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, terrible. It looks so silly when she has to, like, hug the mom. It's like, you can tell she's on her knees. Okay. Anyways, Saw X, way long. We're still probably going to do on the podcast because the other movie is Paw Patrol, and I don't think we're going to do that one. So,
what are you thinking though about a 2-hour Saw film? You've asked me. I'm going to throw it back at you. Can you see a reason why they'd need to be this long?
No. I thought the last two were pretty boring, and I didn't realize they were shorter than 2 hours, to be honest, because they felt like it was 2 hours.
Minutes.
I loved the first Saw. Now, I was young. I was not really into horror movies in 2004. I saw it in theaters. I saw that and The Grudge. Like, I was like, wow, this is a resurgence of horror. I had no clue what I was talking about. but I really liked the first Saw. And now that I understand writing a lot better, I understand that the first Saw is not a twist film. It is a pull the rug out from underneath the audience film where it's like, you couldn't have solved it. There's no way you would have guessed the ending of Saw. And that's only gets, compounded as they're like, oh, but look at all these intricate weavings. It's like, just start with that then. You know, it's like you can't Ocean's 11 these movies, and that's totally what they do. It's like, you thought you knew, but really, it's like, no. Because it gets more and more preposterous, right? Like, it's like, nope. And I mean, he dies in like the fourth one, and then he's like relevant for three more. No, it's not. Come on, movies, chill out. Like, so at least Jigsaw and Spiral try to like go past that. Like, okay, well, now it takes on a life of its own. They failed to successfully pull those off. And I don't love the gore. Like, I don't mind gore, but the torture porn stuff in these movies is a lot. So 2 hours of it is concerning. I just don't know if you can rekindle the spark of the first one. This feels like a franchise that they should have let go after maybe five, and they just keep dragging it back as if it's its own victim. You know, it's like, get in the chair. It's like, I don't want to be in the chair anymore. You're in the chair. And but again, I'm going to see it, probably going to hate it. Maybe I'll love it. Who knows? I hope so. I really do hope it's great. Like, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're just like, it gives me that same feel that first one, Cary Elwes, sawing his own foot off. Like, also, how, just to give an indication of how much I have changed as a film viewer, no clue who Cary Elwes was when I saw Saw. Like, I'd seen him in tons of things, did not register that I'd seen him ever before. I'm still not sure. Am I saying his last name is Elwes, right? Like,
Cary Elwes.
Okay. But for a long time, I definitely had no clue to how to say that guy's name. Like, it's Cary Elwes. Long time has changed. Like, where now I'm like, how did I not know who that was? Like, I'd seen Princess Bride. I saw Liar Liar. He's the obnoxious stepdad in Liar Liar. Like, how did I not make that connection? There's got to be like a fan made version where like Saw is like Liar Liar. He's like Jim Carrey's character snapped and he wants to get rid of the stepdad.
Probably be better than Saw X. I haven't even seen the film. So apparently, Spiral is the prequel to Saw X. So there's your chronology there.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, but apparently, prequel Spiral, it says on. That's what Google's telling me. So
it's all chaos. Anyways, Matt, what was your headline? Because I think we've over-talked Saw. We're going to have to talk about it soon enough.
Yeah, before just after The Exorcist Believer blows our socks off, we're going to be talking about Saw X. But my one, JB, talking about films which are going to be far too long, the trailer today, in fact, for Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon has dropped. In fact, it's the official teaser trailer, which clocks in just shy of 4 minutes, which, if you want to sum up Zack Snyder, God bless his soul, that is a Zack Snyder teaser, is 4 minutes long. So the brief rundown of what this is: Rebel Moon was famously slash infamously Zack Snyder's Star Wars pitch, which he apparently pitched to Lucasfilm, and they said no. You know, why? There are probably people out there who will tell me. I haven't really looked into it too much, but it was pitched to Lucasfilm. It never got picked up. But Zack Snyder, in amongst doing Justice League and the other Netflix films he's been doing, which we mentioned off air, Army of the Dead and the one about the clock and the heists, which weren't actually that bad. And just to preface, I'm not a Zack Snyder hater and hate Zack Snyder whatsoever. I don't like the cult that has become of him, but
yeah,
and he does play into that. Let's not pretend he doesn't, but I've got nothing against Zack Snyder, so I'm not going to bash him. But he's been working on Netflix a lot. Rebel Moon now is his big budget space opera fantasy sci-fi epic, which we all know is going to be about 3 hours long each film. But it's coming out in we've been given the news that there's actually two parts, which is why I say it's going to be very, very long. The first part is called Rebel Moon, A Child of Fire, which comes out on December 22nd, 2023. So, you know, It's a Wonderful Life Can Wait. We're going to watch Rebel Moon. And then 6 months later, on April 19th, 2024, we're getting Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. Now, The Scargiver is the name given to Sophia Boutella's character, who appears to be the lead in this film. Good cast. I'll say that right now before I mention the trailer. You've got Sophia Boutella, Jimon Hunsell, Charlie Hunnam, I was called Michael, Michelle Huisman, Ray Fisher, back with Zack Snyder, Anthony Hopkins, Jenna Malone. I do like Jenna Malone in most things. Carrie Elwes is also in this as well.
Weird.
So, and Corey Stoll. So there's a solid cast here. So the trailer's been released. It's 4 minutes long, and I mean it looks like a Zack Snyder film, and in that I mean it looks equal parts epic, equal parts a bit trashy. Some great shots, I'll say that right now. But the colour palette, again, just feels very muted. Even in its most spectacular, it still feels very bland. And the feeling I'm getting from Rebel Moon is it's going to be a fairly generic offering. And again, I'm going based off the trailer, which immediately, of course, you're going to get Star Wars vibes, but there are clear nods to Dune. There's clear nods to Harry Potter as well, believe it or not, the Potterverse, with certain creatures that appear. And he kind of taken elements of all of those and put it into a blender, and it's come out of what seems to be a fairly, a pretty good looking, but overall fairly generic in terms of the story film. It's not the worst trailer I've seen all year, but when you think you've got Gareth Edwards' film, The Creator, coming out in September, which has a very similar vibe. Again, he has obviously directed a Star Wars, and The Creator looks like it could be the spiritual cousin to Rogue One. That looks fantastic. You know, I saw the trailer again yesterday on the IMAX screen, and it looks amazing. You know, it looks fantastic because it looks like they're focusing on the characters and the spectacle, but characters coming first. Here, I don't get that. I get we're going for epic, we're going for explosions, we're going for the cool spaceships, we're going for blaster fights. I feel like the characters are going to get left behind here. I don't think we're going to get our new Han, Luke and Leia from these characters here, or our new Paul Atreides or whoever. I wasn't blown away by the trailer. I wanted to be. I'm not going to lie, John. I want an epic space opera to win. You know, I want these films to do well, whoever's directing.
Yeah.
Because it may not be my favourite genre despite my love for Star Wars, but you know, I wanted this to do well. But from what I've seen so far, it hasn't particularly won me over. But time will tell. We've only got a few months. Have you had a chance to peruse a trailer or any of the images for this?
I have not seen the trailer yet. I am going to be watching it for sure. I really like Sophia Boutella, and I've been waiting for her to come back because it feels like it's been a minute since I've seen her in something. She's been in a lot of like little indie, like straight to DVD type movies. I saw the one she did with Nick Cage, Prisoners of the Ghostland, which is a wild B movie.
Yeah, that was something.
So I really hope this clicks because it would be cool for her to get. She's a really awesome screen presence. You know, yeah. Like in Kingsman, she's incredible. And even in Star Trek Beyond, when she's like, you know, white alien makeup, like she still like is right there. Like you're like, man, she's good. She does. And, you know, putting her in the lead of this type of sci-fi thing sounds exciting. I'm wondering, I had one of my criticisms of Dune, the Villeneuve one, was that it compared to the David Lynch version, which is the only other understanding of Dune that I have. I've not read the books. I haven't seen the TV series. I haven't done anything else with it. I've only seen the two movies. Kyle MacLachlan's Atreides felt empowered by his role. Like he felt like he was like, I am the chosen one. I will lead my people. And Chalamet in part one, and that is important to indicate that
of course,
yeah. Lynch's Dune is the whole story. He felt more modern, like kind of like the weight of it in a way that I think is reflective of our, I was saying it's the hero's burden instead of the hero's journey. It's evolved to be this negative thing. And Snyder kind of ushered that in a real flat way, right? Like The Watchmen, which has that built into it anyways, but his take on it is real, real dour, right? It's all negative. His take on Superman, his take on Batman have all been just this burden of like being a hero and or having these powers. And is that what, because when you watch the original Star Wars trilogy, Luke is so excited to be a hero and yet manages to still have that nuance of like, well, it's not easy,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to do what it takes. Yes. And there's a joy in, I mean, it's called A New Hope for the love of goodness. Like it's there. There's a hope. Like we see hope. There's horror, there's fear, but there's hope. And I don't know if Snyder can bring that. And so is this just going to be like, everything's terrible, everything sucks, blow it up kind of vibe. And maybe we're currently in need of hope, you know? So
yeah.
If he hasn't evolved as a filmmaker, and given, like, I don't know much about Snyder's personal life, but we know that he stepped away from Justice League because of some family stuff.
Yes.
It didn't sound good. So if he was already super negative before that stuff, you know, I guess Army of the Dead has some fun, but it's still like really dark. Like I've forgotten a lot of that movie, but I'm remembering Batista's character storyline. It's a really dark storyline.
Yeah. I mean, Zack Snyder, he stepped away from directing Justice League because his child passed away. Obviously very, mm-hmm. very sad, tragic, turn of events, and which people do seem to forget when they sort of crap on Zack Snyder, you turned your back on this and you came back to give us your Justice League, which I do think is, you know,
much better
than what Joss Whedon ever managed to give us. But yeah, Army of the Dead, yeah, I think you could see some of that bleed into obviously his work, which is going to, let's, you know, it's not something which you can brush off. And Army of the Dead is a colourful film in terms of it's marketing, but there is also that underlying kind of almost cynicism, I guess, that Snyder has, and that grunginess that he brings. Whereas the Army of Thieves was the prequel. That was directed by Matthias Schweighofer, and Zack Snyder wrote the story for that. But that was a lot more almost Guy Ritchie-esque, that one, in comparison. So they, you know, there are signs that Zack Snyder is, you know, it's not going to, he can, but he will step out of that way of filmmaking. But at the same time, you know, there is this kind of, you know, army of fans. He has legion of fans who worship everything he does, which, fair enough, lots of filmmakers and talent have that. So, you know, he can quite happily preach to his choir and give them what they want, because he obviously excels to himself anyway at doing these big kind of dark epics. And from what I'm reading, Rebel Moon is probably going to be a PG-13, but there is going to be it's a PG-13, part one and two are, and both of them are receiving an extended R-rated cut as well. So even in these films, he's still having to, you know, give us that darker, more mature story that people want. And there are people who want that, fair enough. It isn't always for me, because it needs to be a little bit of nuance to it, but yeah, I don't know if this is, I don't know if Rebel Moon is going to break the funk and give us something inspiring. I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a bit of a trudge for me, but I want to be proven wrong. I do.
Yeah. I hope it's good.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So Saw X is going to be too long, and Rebel Moon, we pray it's going to be any good at all, because that's our Christmas viewing this year. But talking about viewing, we're going to move on to our next segment, which is media consumption, where we talk about the films, TV shows, video games, music, podcasts, which aren't us, anything we've used to pass the time since our last recording. JB, what have you been checking out in the last week?
As always, listen to the new episode of Blank Check. I have now seen all of Park Chan-wook's films except for his first two that are really hard to get. They were never released in America, and he generally disowns them. So I gave up trying, but I've seen all of his other films, and I still have a couple episodes left before we're done. I think next week is The Handmaiden. So this past one was Stoker, which I had not seen. It's the only American film he's made. I liked it. It's definitely, as a lot of his films get, Hitchcock vibes, because he really loves Hitchcock. I really love Hitchcock, so a lot of his movies work for me partly because of that. So I watched on Hulu Smoking Causes Cancer. No, sorry, that's wrong. Smoking causes coughing. it's not wrong. Smoking does cause cancer, but the movie is called Smoking Causes Coughing. I don't know. I always forget the director's name, but he directed
Quentin
Rubber.
Depew.
Yeah, I've seen too many of his movies. Sean loves this guy, and I have a mixed feeling about him. You can't deny he has a unique voice. This movie it did work for me. I liked it. It's weird. No, going in, it's very weird, as all of his films are.
None
of his
films are. Film about a tire.
Yes, Rubber is a killer tire. But Smoking Causes Coughing, interesting. It's got some inspiration from like Power Rangers type stuff, which is what, like, a lot of that really worked for me. It's not the focus of the film, and yet it is the focus of the film. It's a very unique narrative, which, again, everything he does is kind of whatever he wants, and you gotta admire that, if nothing else. Because again, it doesn't feel inherently random either. Like, it feels like he's working through stuff. And so if you can get on his wavelength, it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. Finally watch Velvet Goldmine, a film that's been on my radar for a long time. I didn't know Bale was in it. Like, I knew Ewan McGregor was in it. Toni Collette, young Toni Collette. I get there and I see Bale. I'm like, oh, I had no clue. I like it. I don't think it's not one of my favorite movies, but I do like it a lot. And obviously you see the David Bowie comparison stuff. I'm glad I watched it after having watched the Moon Age Dream or whatever David Bowie doc is. Because I don't think I knew a lot. Like, I was too young when Bowie was at his peak, and then I never really dove into Bowie's life until the last few years, and kind of realized how, you know, important and significant he is as a figure in both music, but also pop culture in general.
Huge.
Like, I was always aware of him, mind you. Like, he was too big for me not to know of him. I just never got into him. And so I'm glad I waited to watch this until I had a bigger appreciation of what it was referencing. Even though it's not a direct reference, it's very, anyone who knows anything about David Bowie, it's very clearly referencing David Bowie. Matt, have you heard of, I don't even know how to say the name of this movie. I think it's Piaf.
I've heard of it because it was in my inbox, or at least it was offered, and it was during my kind of 2 week downtime when I was chilling out. So I've heard of it, haven't watched it.
It's also weird. There's some very good stuff in it. There's some scenes that are very uncomfortable. I don't recommend it for casual audiences. It's one of those films though that really stays with you. It's hard not to keep thinking about what it's saying or what its implications are. So it did go up even on my ratings. Originally I was like, this is, for me, it's like 3-star. And then, like, as I kept thinking about it and its style and its visuals, I'm like, okay, it's a 4-star. Like, it's too unique to ignore.
Did you get a screener or did you see this in theaters?
I got a screener. It would not play anywhere near me. I'd have to drive a distance. It's not the type of movie to get that kind of a wide release. It is about a Foley artist, and that really clicks for me because it's movie related. So yeah, but, and then I watched a film about a week ago called Scrapper. It has like Florida Project kind of vibes. The actress is brand new. She was cast for this role. She almost backed out because she was having like anxiety about doing it. And I liked it a lot. I thought it really it was funny. Matt, you and I were on the minority opinion of After Sun.
Yeah, it wasn't. I know it was a lot of people's film of the year, or you know, Best Picture, and we weren't quite on that train.
It's one of those things where I'm like, what is it about this film that clicked for so many people that just isn't clicking for me? Because it felt out. Scrapper definitely, Scrapper definitely is a similar vibe to that, except it has a little bit more humor, which I think worked for me a lot more. And it also has a lot of I'm going to say Mariel Heller, Won't You Be My Neighbor, or Diary of a Teenage Girl, where she kind of integrates like a surrealist element to this very grounded real story. And I liked that part of Scrapper a lot. Those scenes really like connected to me, and I was just way more into it than I was After Sun. I don't know for sure why, but it definitely clicked more for me. And again, I keep bringing up After Sun in relation to this film, but I don't know how else to like. That's what I'm the most reminded of, and like I'm like I preferred Scrapper. I know everyone else preferred After Sun, but for me, Scrapper is more my style. So it just clicked. But and then since seeing Mutant Mayhem, I am a bit Turtles obsessed.
Yes.
David and I both have purchased the Cowabunga collection for the PS5 because it went on sale for $20. The disc version too. Like it was like 23 on for the digital. It was 20 for the disc. I'm like, well, I'm going to get the disc because that's cool. Yeah. It's basically all of the old Turtle games. It's like the NES games, the Super NES games, the Sega games, the arcade games, like back in the day, like the Turtles in Time, all of that. It's the Game Boy game, I think, even like is on there. I don't always enjoy those retro games because a lot of them were never designed to be beaten. But at the same time, and when they do these kind of retro re-releases, they make them beatable because you can rewind when things go wrong, or you can like save and load, which you couldn't do in the old games. Like you just had to start over. Yep. So it makes it a game that used to feel impossible be possible to actually like get all the way through. And again, you're playing as Turtles and having a good time. So it's a lot of fun. As you know, especially for $20, you get all these games, and they have a bunch of like Easter egg stuff too. Like all of the boxes from the games, you can actually like, you have like a virtual room where you have all the boxes, you have the instruction manuals from all the things. So like stuff like that for like hardcore video game collectors and stuff. It's pretty cool virtual version of that. So if you can find it for $20, I definitely recommend.
I'd very much like to find that for $20 or £15 over here. I used to love playing those side-scrolling arcade games as a kid. Turtles in Time, whatever it was it was called or rebranded as. But yeah, that's what I remember playing. And Scrapper, I believe, without checking, which I probably should have done, I think that comes out at the end of this recording week in the UK. I will try and grab that at some point, check it out in the next few weeks, though I imagine it won't have a particularly long theatrical window, so I'll check it out in the next week or two, I have a feeling I'll probably be falling on your side of the fence in terms of which of the two films that you mentioned, this one and After Sun, kind of fits more into my theme. After Sun was, you know, it should have been a killer hit for both of us, but didn't quite work out. But maybe Scrapper will for me, but it certainly did for you by the sounds of it. Interesting collection of films there, by the way, JB. My week, I haven't listened to any pods, really. I've just been listening to audiobooks. I listen to Star Wars ones on my commute because it gets me through the long drives back and forward to collecting my little one. I've been listening to music. I've been re-listening to Mitski again. I really like Mitski. I'm sure most people may have heard of her. Probably should have done. I've always enjoyed it, but I kind of fell off the wagon a bit. And then I found out that she has a new album coming out next month. So I went back and listened to some of her older stuff again and realised how much I enjoyed that kind of lo-fi, indie, punk, pop, mystery core music that she did. Really very much enjoyed getting back into Mitski. In terms of films, I've seen two other than Blue Beetle, and they have both been substantially better. Sorry, Blue Beetle. I saw The Blackening, which I've been wanting to see for a while. I know it's been getting good reviews from yourself. I think even Big Tuna didn't hate it, which is saying something.
Oh, no, liked it.
Yeah, you know, he did, yep. And I was hoping to see it at Tribeca, maybe Fantasia, one of the two. But it was in person only at both events. It was fine. There was an advanced type screening at Cineworld recently, so I saw that and I had a blast of it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And I thought it would be, because the trailer, I sometimes wonder that they're going to throw all the best jokes in the trailer and, you know, make miss out some of them. They did, but this is the kind of horror comedy I enjoy. So The Blackening, without going into too many spoilers in for that one, I did enjoy that one an awful lot. And I also managed to catch an early showing of Past Lives as well, the A24 flick. John, I know you've seen this. What were your thoughts on this one?
Oh, man, okay, I definitely saw it. What was that? And now I just remember. I really liked it a lot, actually. It reminded me of almost like a truncated Before trilogy. Right. I like, there's so many interesting visuals in that film. We're having a Zoom conversation or a FaceTime conversation, and how the filmmaker chooses to show it is really interesting, because it I don't know, she deviates the standard like shot reverse shot for it and lets things linger. It's such a well controlled film. The pacing, some people might feel like it's slow. For me, it just felt so deliberate and so intentional as part of the sitting with these two characters and kind of learning their history. And it really, really clicked in a lot of ways for me.
Yeah, I knew you. I remember you'd seen it, but I couldn't remember what you thought about it. Yeah, I caught this. It's a new film from Celine Song. I think it may be the best film I've seen all year. I loved this film. It really, really, you know, the Before comparisons. It's like the anti-Before trilogy in terms of, in the Before trilogy, it's about choice. It's about opportunities that you took, that, you know, the decisions that you acted upon. Whereas Past Lives is obviously the opposite. It's almost like it's coming to terms with the choices you didn't make. And
yeah,
God damn, does it end on such a powerful note.
Oh, dude.
Such an incredible final third. And yeah, the final sequence as well. That is, you know, a big one. It is unbelievable. And the Celine Song takes a time to build up the characters of Nora and Haesung, who are our two main characters, and John Magaro is Arthur as well. You really get time to spend, you understand what's going on, you get to really kind of feel for them, you get to bond with them, and you kind of get suckered into, I know where this is going to go. But then the film decides, no, this, we're going to tell a film about real life here. So we're going to talk about what would actually happen in a situation like this, probably. And it's written so well, and it's presented, like you said, there's so many interesting shots in this, and the way that it's the shots themselves are framed, let alone the story, is so interesting and so appealing, and really helps to convey the message on screen, which is done in English and also in Korean as well. They really flip between the two so very well. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away about the film, but I'm leaning towards this at the minute. This could be, I think it's going to dethrone Spider-Verse, because by the end of this, I was, I don't know, there's a certain relatability to it. And I think you also take away, you know, what you put into a film like this. And I was like, God damn, this is powerful stuff, man. So I think this is going to be number one as of now. By the end of the year, Saw X may have taken its place. Who knows?
Oh, but, yeah.
So, yeah, Past Lives, I really, really like that. I will say, I know it's getting a lot of praise in a minute. There will be people who it just doesn't work for. That I respect that completely. And I also saw the first two episodes of Star Wars Ahsoka, the new series coming to Disney Plus. We were given the chance to attend a screening in London, which I'll mention shortly, but the embargo is actually up in terms of the review embargo is up, so I can say what I thought about the show. It comes out in about 3 hours for you as of recording, but I say this as someone who, yes, we do Star Wars sessions, but I think it's a very, very good show. It takes its time to, surprisingly, with Dave Filoni in charge, I thought it was going to be kind of a bit of like whiz bang wallop, but it's very slow. It's very, as in it's deliberately paced. Doesn't always work. I'll say that right now. Sometimes you do think, I need a bit more from certainly our lead character in those in the first, potentially the first episode of the first half. I need a little bit more from you here, but I know I can see what you're going for, pathos and gravitas. But you know, you want lightsaber fights, you're going to get them. You want visuals that look better than Obi-Wan, I'm sorry to keep crapping on that show, you're going to get them. You do kind of need a base knowledge, level knowledge of Star Wars Rebels. You do kind of need that, but you can go on YouTube and get a 10-minute rundown on that. But the show does do a pretty good job of letting you know what's going on. We went with somebody who is a casual fan of Star Wars that hadn't seen Rebels, and we asked them afterwards, you know, did you get what was going on? Did you understand the references? And they said, yeah, it was explained well enough and early enough, so I knew what was going on. And that was the most important thing, I think. But there is, it does fall into kind of exposition heavy, even if it isn't like dumps of text, dumps of dialogue. That the first episode and second really kind of do exist to let's set up the world, let's set up the characters, let's catch people up on these characters if you haven't seen that particular series. Whereas now I hope episodes 3 to 8 now become its own thing, because it sets up enough interesting threads. But there's plenty there, which the tropes are there, and I mean that in a positive way and a negative way. You know, you want certain things, you're going to get it. The music is fantastic. Actually, the music is really very good. But yeah, a few gripes as I do have with most things, which I think is becoming a problem with modern Star Wars. One of the main kind of MacGuffin-esque type things is pretty much taken from The Force Awakens and The Rise of Skywalker, and I kind of wish that they'd gone a different direction. But Dave Filoni, who showruns and directs a lot of it and wrote the whole thing, is a little bit more careful when explaining why the MacGuffin is what it is, rather than how episode 7 and 9 did it. But no, it's good. It's good. I'm intrigued to see what comes after what comes next. I hope they start going down their own path. But I think the villains in this show, as of yet, very, very good. Best villains we've had in a TV series so far, because they mean business and they show in the first 2 episodes they'll get the job done. You know, there's no messing about, and I quite enjoy that. But yeah, hopefully it's good. It also has the potential, I'll say it now, it does have the potential to potentially fall apart if the story chooses to go down one or two particular ways. It can crumble under its own weight, but we'll see. Hopefully it doesn't, JB. But is that a show that you're at all bothered by?
I don't know yet. You know, I didn't watch Clone Wars. I haven't watched Rebels. It's been on Rebels. I wanted to watch more so than Clone Wars. I tried Clone Wars multiple times. It felt dense, and I'd never liked the art style. Mm-hmm. And it just never, like, it never could pull me in, despite multiple efforts. And I even tried just jumping into specific episodes, and I just, it's not there. My love of Star Wars has definitely faltered. There's a lot of things I still love about Star Wars, but I much like superhero fatigue, Star Wars fatigue set in, because it was like all this hype and then let down, all this hype and then let down, all this, like, it's superhero fatigue is not even that. It's just like, there's so much of it.
Yes.
The Star Wars letdowns have been massive. Like, when I've been disappointed, I've been disappointed. And, I can't deny that, like, the trailers made me excited. I am a big fan of Rosario Dawson, and I liked her in Mandalorian. You know, when she wasn't Mandalorian, right? Not Boba Fett, yeah, or was it the other way around?
In both. Obviously, yeah, okay. Smaller role. Let's also remember that. Yes. Now she's got to lead this thing.
And what I've known of the character, which is, again, little, because I haven't seen... I did see the Clone Wars movie, but I only saw it once, and I don't remember it. That's at all.
Awful.
But... You know, I'm familiar with her. I obviously don't have the connection that I would have if I'd watched all the Clone Wars or if I'd watched all of Rebels. So there's like that. There is that level of separation. But, you know, I was really late to Andor, and I loved Andor. So I might hold off, let a few episodes drop before I dive into this.
Episodes 1 and 2 drop on premiere day. So as is seemingly the way, the first two drop. Yeah. There's two waiting for you.
And how many is the series going to be?
8. So okay, 25% of it drops in one day.
Yeah, I'm still like, I gotta also admit, having not read much but played the Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes game for like way too long, I played it for like a solid 5 years or something. I had a lot of the characters who I would kind of have to read like fandoms. I'm like, why do I have this character? Thrawn is a character who I'm very intrigued by, and the fact that he's supposed to show up in this, I think, is as alluring to me as Ahsoka herself. So
Lars Mikkelsen, is who voiced him in Rebels, is now playing him in live action, and Lars Mikkelsen's a very, very talented, accomplished actor, so that excites me.
I'm probably going to catch it.
Yep, so if you do, hopefully you enjoy it. JB, if you ever need any kind of lore dumps or who's this guy, you know who to come to.
Of
this
course,
geek right here. But again, as much as I'm a huge fan of the whole thing in general, there is a chance that this will not work. But it will. Let's see how the next few episodes go. But I'm pretty confident that it's going to be one of the better series so far. But who knows? Nice. But it may be bloody awesome. May not be. I know someone who is. You are. So am I. That's why we do the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. And of course, to do that, we have to stay bloody awesome each week. JB, how have you been doing so?
As I do every few months, I decided to mix up my workout routine. I've been doing a 3-day a week full body like strength training. I wanted to make it back to 4 times to the gym, so I decided to mix it up, and I'm going splits, like upper body, lower body. I'm 2 days into the 4-day workout routine. Today is my rest day. And I got to say, I've seen a lot of increase, both from the full body strength and now this. I'm pushing myself a little more safely, because I am always afraid of hurting myself, because I don't want to fall where I can't exercise. But I also am like, I've been working out for a few years now. I should be getting stronger, and I feel like I've been pretty stagnant with like my weights and whatnot. So I've really been pushing myself and, doing more of I'm using the Smith. We only have a Smith machine at my gym, so I don't have like a traditional bench press, which kind of works better for me, because I am I don't like asking people who I don't know to spot me. So the Smith machine takes a little bit of the pressure off. But I've seen an increase in my bench. I've seen an increase in my squats and stuff like that. So it's the new routine. I'm sore right now. I'm sitting here full body sore, even though it's like Sunday. I did upper body. Yesterday I did legs, and I am now on my rest day going, oh, I'm sore. In a good way. Like, I'm not in pain, I'm not hurt, but I'm definitely like, I've worked my muscles. Like, I feel it everywhere. So a new workout routine I'm very happy with, and, you know, continuing going to the gym and still enjoying it, which is the key, right? Like, you got to like how you're exercising. And I like strength training, I think, a lot more than I realized. Like, I don't want to do it like competitively or anything like that, but I do like, it feels good to like see progress, you know?
Yeah, you're not selling it to me on the pain side of it, though. So one thing that I always hate about the gym is the rest day isn't a rest day. It's a massive recovery day. But I'm aiming to go back at the weekend, JB, to be like Burke. But let's see. But no, mix it up, JB. If it becomes monotonous, it becomes stale, you know what happened. You're just not going to bother doing it. So good on you, my friend. Well, to be honest, my bloody awesome was going to the fan event, the multimedia fan event with Ahsoka. I mean, but I've just kind of explained that it was fun. Went with obviously with Sessions co-host Luke, went to my brother Sean and the Sessions videographer / editor Charlie, and we all went together, and it was great fun. Got to see it on the biggest screen in the UK in the IMAX at Waterloo in London, and yeah, had a fun time. Then went out afterwards, grabbed a rum and coke, and spoke about what we didn't enjoy about it. But other than that, I've had a very busy weekend, John. You've seen on the socials. I went on a boat with my daughter, my 7-year-old. We went on a boat, and she's steering us up and down the river. And then as soon as I touched the wheel, the engine conked out, and we had to be towed back to the start after half an hour. But I got all of my money back, which is very kind of them. But that was fun. Went down to the beach. Went to the beach in Bournemouth, down south in London, UK. Very hot weather. Enjoyed that, did all the things you do. You get donuts, you get all the other stuff, you get wet in the sea, you get covered in sand. I understand Anakin Skywalker completely now. That was an awful lot of fun. And then went alien hunting again on Sunday as well. The story being that the local kind of natural area near me is where H.G. Wells set War of the Worlds. That's where the Martians landed, in this particular patch of the world. It's 3 minutes around the corner from where I live, in the sand pits there. And if you listen to the book, which I think Richard Burton narrates so fabulously, it's set in Horsell Common. They describe it. And the film, the Spielberg film, was originally mooted to be, or at least some of it, be shot in that original location. And then they decided, do you know what? We actually need to do this. We need to do it in America or in California or wherever they did it, because that's what will make it more authentic. And to be honest, I actually really like the War of the Worlds film, apart from the cop out at the ending, the Spielberg ending. Yeah. But yeah, so basically, Stand Bloody also actually, but I had a really busy weekend with my little one, busier than I thought it was going to be. I was wiped out, as John will know. John will send a message and he won't hear from me for like 9 hours. Some of that is because I'm just recuperating. I was absolutely zonked. But so it's been a busy few days. So Staying Bloody Awesome by actually being very social and seeing one fine film and two very good films. So all in all, not a bad time, go. John.
Not at all. No. That's all we can do.
It is. Maybe next week's film will provide us with even more joy. We'll see. If you feel the need for speed, we're going to be talking about Gran Turismo next week, the new film from Neil Blomkamp. I've already seen it. Have you seen it yet, John?
I have not. It doesn't come to my theater until this weekend. It was a mystery movie a couple weeks ago, and it was one of the first ones I didn't go to. And then it got Sony like delayed the release in a weird, like staggered way. Like they did some theaters and then they did a few more, and it's expanding out full this weekend. So I will see it this weekend.
There we go. So Gran Turismo is our film for next week. But in the meantime, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Blue Beetle. I had to think of the film then. Or any of the films that we've mentioned or series that we've mentioned on this episode. And if you want to do that, you can find us on the interwebs, online, on Twitter or X. Where is Twitter? At BAMP_podcast. BAMP_podcast. JB, where are we on Instagram and Threads?
Bloody Awesome Movie Pod.
Yes, on Facebook, Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I think we'll be on Blue Sky as well soon, the sort of Twitter adjacent thing, but we'll sort that one out. Just another social media which hasn't quite taken off yet. Check out the tomato meter in the next day or two, because we will be contributing to the Blue Beetle score. So maybe it'll go up from its current place of 76. Maybe it will go down. We'll fight about that one off air. But if you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at whatiwatchtonight.co.uk and across all the socials, including Letterboxd. Just find What I Watch Tonight. JB, whereabouts are you?
At BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms.
Yes, sir. And if you like what we're doing here, and we really hope you do, because we do, please do give us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast provider of choice, because it helps the show grow still. It gets more listeners in. It gets us up the listening lists. And it's another way for us to hear from more of you each and every week. But with that, guys, as always, stay bloody awesome.
And keep watching movies. Blood, 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 bloody. Blood, 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 bloody, blood, 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 bloody, blood, 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 bloody, blood, blood, bloody. Awesome.